WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Among the many executive actions President Trump has taken so far, you will find two orders that aim to dismantle federal diversity, equity, and inclusion programs.
DEI is seemingly dead, keeping with a campaign promise made by President Trump.
Big companies like Walmart and Meta have already taken steps to scale back their DEI initiatives.
Our country is going to be based on merit again. Can you believe it?
Meanwhile, in recent weeks, seemingly in lockstep with the incoming administration, U.S. corporations like Target, Amazon, Walmart, Meta, and Chicago-based McDonald's began rolling back DEI initiatives. Trump calls DEI programs radical and wasteful, but critics of his actions say they're setting the nation back 50 years or more. The guests to help us understand what these moves by President Trump could mean for the country and for the Chicago area were Alvin Tillery, a poli-sci professor and the director of the Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy at Northwestern University, and Calmetta Coleman, the chief operating officer of the Chicago Urban League. That's a nonprofit organization dedicated to economic and racial equity for Black Chicago. They began by providing us with an understanding of diversity, equity, and inclusion, because there are a lot of competing narratives out there about what those terms actually mean. So what is DEI? Calmetta kicked us off.
For me, I would say that DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, really are efforts to make workplaces reflect the people, the communities, and actually America. So we're looking at people who may have been, for instance, discriminated in the past or overlooked or not been a part of the workplace, a part of decision making. And I actually also see it as a huge asset to businesses who actually want to do business with America.
Professor Tillery, what would you say is the goal of DEI initiatives and programs, whether it's at the federal level or in a company or organization?
Well, Calmetta is absolutely correct. I mean, these programs started in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s as anti-discrimination programs. So they started with the language that President Kennedy used in 1961, where he asked defense contractors to stop segregating their workplaces by acting affirmatively. So we used to call them affirmative action programs, and we called them non-discrimination programs. Frankly, we changed the name to diversity, equity, inclusion because white corporate leaders in the 1980s and 90s didn't like the other two framings. And so the point is to stop discrimination first against Black people, then women, then other people of color. It's expanded to other communities as corporations began to see the value of transforming their workplaces from exclusionary ones to ones that deployed all talent.
So at its core, if you are asked, how does DEI differ from affirmative action? It is essentially the same thing.
It does not differ. The one additive or positive externality is now there's a focus on inclusion, which means we're not just talking about sourcing talent and hiring people, but we're also talking about how you treat that talent. How you make everyone feel welcome. That's the added benefit of the I. I'll also like to, for your listeners to know that diversity and equity are not optional, right? They are enshrined in the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution and also the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And that's precisely why Mr. Trump wants to overturn both of those things.
Calmetta, you're nodding. I got to hear your thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. Really, just to reflect on what the professor said, really what we're talking about is turning back more than 60 years of progress that really focused on having a workplace, having a country, the way that we treat people. And so people have to understand that DEI isn't just about race. It's also women, it's seniors, it's veterans, it's people with disabilities. And so we have to really think about that. Like, I think people...
That's the thing I hear misconstrued the most.
Yeah, I was going to say, frankly,
this is an initiative to get black people ahead.
I think when people hear it, that's what they think. They think, oh, this is just about black people.
Yes, and?
You know, unfortunately, I do believe that a lot of the people who may be thinking, oh, yeah, this is a good thing, may not realize that it'll also have an impact on them and other people they love who might not look like me.
So let's go back a week to Inauguration Day. Give me your reaction when you heard President Trump was indeed following through on a campaign promise to slash DEI programs, Calmetta.
I was not surprised. So I will say I was actually celebrating MLK Day. So I didn't hear about a lot of it until the next morning. But, you know, prior to the election, the Chicago Urban League made a lot of effort to really educate the community around Project 2025. And as a candidate, Trump said repeatedly that he had nothing to do with it. It really was clear to us that a lot of the things that were espoused there were part of the platform that we expected to see. So I was not surprised. I think the swiftness of it took some people aback. Mm-hmm. And so it happened on day one, but it's a campaign promise in a lot of ways that he kept. And so I think that we have to really be mindful that it wasn't just words, it wasn't just rhetoric, and we have to actually understand now what the real implications will be.
Professor, your thoughts that day?
Yeah, I agree with Calmetta. I mean, no one should have been surprised by what happened on day one. His last executive order in 2020 was to overturn or to ban DEI programs in the federal government. I once, as a young student at Morehouse College, had the chance to meet Dr. Maya Angelou, and she used to say, as we all know, when people tell you who they are, believe them.
Yes.
And Donald Trump has been telling us who he is with his racist policy positions since his first term and also prior to that. So no one should be surprised that he is trying to overturn inclusion, equity, and diversity programs. I will say that the particular meanness of overturning Executive Order 11246 is something that even caught me off guard.
So let me stick with you for a moment here, Professor, because I want to make sure everybody's on the same page about what these orders mean. There are two executive orders slashing federal DEI programs. So fill us in on what the first one states.
So the first one is essentially a redo of his 2020 order, which bans those contractors and also persons seeking federal government grants under Title VI from, you know, using DEI programs, right?
Okay.
The second thing is that this is what really shocked me is Executive Order 11246 is basically where President Lyndon Johnson made non-discrimination against anyone the federal law.
So he's reversing protections that were instated as far back as 1965.
Right. He's ending non-discrimination.
Wow.
So by overturning 11246, federal contractors now have the right to say, Sasha, we will not interview you because we don't interview women. We will not interview LGBT. We will not interview black people or Asians. And so
Huge rollback.
They're ending the Office of Federal Contract Compliance, which means there will be no one looking over the shoulders of, wait for it, Elon Musk, who's been sued to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars for racial discrimination in his Tesla plants, right? And so this is where we should all be worried when you're rolling back the baseline standard for non-discrimination in a society like America. It's deeply troubling.
Environmental protections are also being revoked. What's up with that, Professor?
For me, it looks like we are sliding toward an autocratic oligarchy where people who are paying for corporate interest to be represented in the executive branch agencies are getting exactly what they want. Again, no one should be surprised by this because this is how Mr. Trump talks and behaves, and this is what he promised.
Mm-hmm. You research racial politics here in the States. How are black constituencies at large reacting to Trump's actions here?
Well, we have a poll in the field that we'll share with you next week, but you know, just people just tend to call my office and write to me from around the country. People are afraid, and I'm sure Kamata is hearing a lot from the many, many more constituents that the Urban League has.
Yeah, tell me what Urban League folks are telling you.
Yeah, very much so. I think that one we saw before the election, there was a, people didn't actually understand Project 2025, and they maybe repeated, oh, well, he said that that doesn't have anything to do with him.
Yeah, he kept saying it. That's not me.
Right. And so, and when we really tried to really explain that to people, it was like, oh, wow. And I think there's an understanding that came too late. And then I think that there is a, it is difficult for people to actually believe, like I think one of you mentioned the meanness. I think people thought, oh, that can't happen. Oh, you know, they're not going to let that happen. And so based on what? And so now it's, okay, it's words. And what I hear them saying is, okay, well, for instance, as you see companies who are already starting to roll back DEI programs that you mentioned in the beginning, and people are saying, oh, well, that's just, they're just changing the language, but they're probably still going to hire Black people, hire people with disabilities, hire women, and be more inclusive. And I am asking, I think we as a Chicago Urban League are asking, what makes you think that? Right. Like, what makes you think that?
Where's the precedent that would show you that's
when
what it
it's
is?
Actually, you know, we have seen repeatedly and sadly and surprisingly that even in America, that people will sit back when there's someone who puts on this much of a display of power and callousness of not caring about who it hurts. And to that point, willingness to be bought by financial interests. That it's hard for us to believe that, oh, okay, that can't happen in America. But I think America is quickly changing, and I think a lot of our constituents that we see are realizing that now.
Talk more, Kalmetta, about how you anticipate this is going to impact people, not just here, but across the country.
Yeah, so I do want to say this as well, Sasha. So you asked me, what am I hearing? So that what I just talked about was one thing I'm hearing. Another thing I'm hearing that's really troubling to me are people who are from marginalized communities, but who may be faring better financially, who think it's not going to affect me. Mm-hmm. It's not going to impact me. Oh, I'm going to be fine. And I think that that sort of almost being tuned out to reality.
So I saw a lot of that narrative right around election time, right? Right around November. And this past weekend saw a couple of instances. I don't know if you saw on social media, because they're making the rounds, of some of those people that you describe, you know, in minority positions, but maybe a little better off, crying in videos and saying, oh my goodness, I didn't realize it was going to be like this.
Right.
I had no idea. Right. And then you have the other subsection of the crowd thinking, how could you have no idea? We've been trying to tell you.
Right. And so, and what I say, another thing that I'm seeing that's troubling but also understandable, there's also a subset of people who are saying, you know what, I'm just going to sit back and watch, because you people who didn't vote, you people who didn't do one or the other thing, you're getting what you deserve. But it's not as isolated as that, right? It's not going to just be the people who did not think about the impacts to democracy and the freedoms and protections we had. We will all be affected. So to your point, the whole country will be affected.
Absolutely. So, Professor, the Trump administration is also going after any potential efforts to, quote unquote, disguise DEI programs, presumably by, you know, putting DEI work under another heading. Yeah. What do you make of that?
He doesn't have the power to do that. And I think that what Kalmetta is suggesting is something that really frustrated me during the election cycle as well. I think people in our communities and people that are on the progressive side of the agenda don't step into their power enough. So, again, equity cannot be banned by a president. We are all guaranteed equity by the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. We need to be racing to courts right now, filing lawsuits for discrimination against companies that say they're banning equity. First thing. Second thing that I will say is that when Dr. King and Lyndon Johnson got the Civil Rights Act passed in 1964, there were three Black members of Congress who had to work in a segregated institution. They couldn't sit in the lunchroom. They had to go in different doors. In 2025, we have 63 Black members of Congress, including four senators. We have a lot of power. We have incredible commercial power. I know that there are boycott movements that are underfoot, that a lot of the leading civil rights organizations are starting. We need to be putting pressure on corporate leaders who really don't have much of a moral compass. And what they're going to do is they're going to lean the way the lawsuits are blowing them. So we need to be blowing in the other direction. And we need to say to Mr. Trump, we will see you in court about whether or not you can ban equity.
Yeah.
Right.
Rob Shriver, who was the acting head of the U.S. Office of Personnel Management under Joe Biden, said that he thinks this move is part of a larger strategy to replace nonpartisan federal workers with political lobbyists. You're nodding, Calmetta. You agree with that take?
I'm nodding because you don't have to think it. It was actually spelled out in Project 2025. Yeah. And so that is actually, that is the goal.
So it was crystal clear to you.
It is the goal to, you know, what you're seeing, we've seen in the political appointments that there is an effort to fill positions with people who will be loyal to what this particular administration is seeking to do.
Well, you know, Professor, you also do work as a Democratic strategist.
Yes.
And so I'm curious, you know, as someone who has advised Democrats on their messaging, how do you think that these moves could fit into Trump's political ambitions and the Republican Party's current platform?
I don't see a lot of fight back on the part of the National Democrats. I mean, it's really troubling to me.
Is that surprising, though?
No, because I'd been warning them for 18 months that they didn't have their win number with black men, and they weren't listening. To the extent that I needed to start my own super PAC, the Alliance for Black Equality, and run ads. And a month out of the election, I had the only black male-centered content telling people that Donald Trump was going to put in place national stop and frisk. So it doesn't surprise me at all. But they're making the same mistakes over and over again. The rush to jump on board with the Lake and Riley Act. You know, it's like part of the reason they lost the election. And I want to be clear to everyone listening. The black community alone had enough votes in the swing states to guarantee Kamala Harris a comfortable victory. Folks didn't turn out for her. A big part of the reason they didn't turn out was because there was never any raising of the alarm about Project 2025. Calmetta and I may be one of the, you're the only person I know other than myself that's read all of Project 2025.
It was long. You read it all?
It was long. Oh, wow. Yeah, had to, right? But so, but where were the Democrats? Why weren't they running ads toward our community? They didn't do it. And so I worry that the Democrats are so fixated on winning the majority of white voters that they ignore the 46-47% of white voters that vote for them, and they ignore minority communities in a way that will always guarantee a loss. So I'm worried that the fight back is going to have to come from the Urban League. It's going to have to come back from the NAACP, National Action Network, League of Women Voters. You know, that's who is going to have to do this work, because the National Democratic Party, I'm not sure that they have the tools. They've never shown me that they have the tools to do it.
So now I want to come back to our home city, Calmetta, Chicago. Chicago has its own DEI legislation. This isn't going anywhere, is it?
No, it's not. But I, before I go into that, I want to say this. So I want to be really clear that so the Chicago Urban League, for us, this is not a partisan issue. We're a nonpartisan organization. But where we do speak out, what we do advocate around are any sort of policies that negatively impact black people and other underserved communities. And so that's our standpoint. So for me, it's not only the Democrats who, you know, should be afraid, should be concerned, should be thinking about getting ready to fight. I think that Republicans with good sense, independents with good sense, need to be thinking about if you actually care about the democracy that, you know, we have built here in these United States of America, should be thinking about how do we fight back against these things that we're seeing that are, I can't even call them unprecedented because they were the law of the
land
for
well,
many years.
We've got 30 seconds here. Tell me more about Chicago's response.
So, I will say I'll have to give the city credit that, you know, Mayor Johnson has been really straightforward about what he will and will not stand for. So I think that when you look at some of the things DEI in a number of ways in terms of how it impacts individuals within the city.
Yeah.
If you look at some of like the immigration policies, the things that they're trying to bring down, where he has said that we will protect our sanctuary city status, right? Yeah. and or stand on behalf of it. But even though I think a lot of citizens don't feel that way.
Yeah, we can talk about this for days, right? There's so much here, but we'll have to leave it here for now. Kalmetta Coleman is Chief Operating Officer of the Chicago Urban League, and Alvin Tillery from the Center for the Study of Diversity and Democracy at Northwestern. Thank you both.
Thank you for
having us. Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Alyssa Manthi and Ellie Gilbert-Bear. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. We're continuing our coverage around the second Trump presidency as things develop over the next few weeks. Now, for the latest news and analysis with a local twist, subscribe to our podcast to keep you informed and in the know. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.